All right. I like it.
Marina, we do not have the benefit of having you here in the studio, so we have no idea how old you are. But you sound young, but authoritative.
Yeah, I mean, I am pretty young. I got started in the field right out of my master's program, so mm-hmm. I'm 27.
Okay, but you probably mm-hmm. have seen a lot in those years, haven't you?
I have. I actually, during my master's program, I worked at a prison, and then I started working for Rogers, and mm-hmm. Almost all of my experience is with mental health with addiction.
You know, Marina, how is it? I mean, when you were going through school, I mean, you've got a lot of extensive training. Were there courses that were there to help you be able to turn it off when you go home? Because I got to believe, I mean, you're dealing with a really heavy subject here. I mean, how do you handle that?
I mean, we learn kind of about vicarious trauma in the mental health field, but it's hard to turn it off when you go home. It really is. People stick with you. Their stories stick with you. It's almost haunting sometimes.
And I imagine there's some sort of an oath or a code that you aren't... Well, I shouldn't imagine. I will ask you, is there some sort of an oath or a code where you really should not be discussing these personal issues with your girlfriends or your husband or boyfriend or your parents? I mean, I suppose maybe if you don't use names, you can discuss it a little bit, but,
Yeah, so usually, obviously, one of the major benefits of therapy counseling is confidentiality. When you're talking about somebody, you never want to use their name. You don't want to use any major identifying, like, factors, which could be, you know, their race, their age, but just to protect their identity, maybe where they work or something like that. Like, it's not really relevant to share with anybody. So I know within the field, when we try and talk with coworkers, we try not to use those as much as just kind of dealing with, like, the actual issues. You know, what's the drug of choice, what's going on in their life and stuff like that.
So do you find it therapeutic for yourself to sometimes discuss these cases with other coworkers?
Oh, absolutely. I think peer supervision, and obviously like a more formal supervision with an actual supervisor is needed. It's a requirement while you're in training. When you first get your master's, like, you have to go through a few years of training before you get your full license. And a big piece of that is the supervision, because you can't always make the best decision by yourself. You need somebody else's insight, their own experience, to kind of give you another perspective.
Now, as a counselor with Rogers, what percentage of your daily activity involves drug counseling, and what other types of counseling do you practice as well?
So I run the dual diagnosis IOP at the Rogers Kenosha location. Direct patient care, I work directly with patients for 3 hours. But, I mean, throughout the day, I'm doing assessments with them. I'm trying to set them up with providers in the community. So, I mean, honestly, just about everything is integrated with addiction and substance use care. But then, to answer your question, we also do mental health, just more so straight, the depression, the anxiety, different stuff like that. But a lot of what we deal with is all intertwined. So sometimes it's hard to tease out where one thing is starting and another thing's ending.
Marina, it's got to be quite a challenge to go into a career with this, where your first work environment is a prison. I mean, that's got to be pretty intense.
It was. It was actually a really great experience. I sought out that location,
Was it in the state of Wisconsin?
No. I actually did my master's program in Philadelphia.
Okay.
So it was right outside the city. But that was where I kind of got my first experience learning about you know, obviously different people's stories, but I had so many clients when I worked at the prison that were in prison for, you know, like different kind of possession charges.
Sure.
And I'd ask them, how do you get started? And a lot of it came from a prescription or, you know, a difficult upbringing where they were exposed to drugs at an early age, and it just kind of escalated from there.
So you would say that a lot of a certain percentage, what percentage would you assess? And I know this is somewhat subjective, but the people that are incarcerated, it's because of addiction.
Ooh, that's a really, really great question. I would be tempted to say like 80%.
Wow.
That is the same exact number that the district attorney told us.
Yeah. Oh, is it really?
Yep.
Honestly, almost everybody, it's sad to me, which is why I actually really liked working at the prison. They didn't have access to
a lot of services. This is like the third
time
she said this.
What's that?
This is about the third time you said you really liked working at the prison.
Well, I think that's really awesome, though, because working at the prison spurred you to go on and find a career in which you can help keep some people out of prison, hopefully.
That's definitely the plan.
Sure.
And like, so these people, I work primarily with men. So, you know, you think of prison, you think rough and tough. I was kind of like, I don't know, like their safe person. So they would confide very, very personal things, you know, relationship issues, like family history, like, you know, maybe past trauma.
So
they would feel comfortable enough to tell me about that.
So you obviously have that ability to win their confidence.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, for a lot of people, even outside of prisons, there is comfort within the therapeutic relationship, because it's somebody that you can talk to outside of, you know, people you interact with all the time who are just there to listen to you and not judge you. So you trust them a little more, I think.
Well, and I think it also is helpful to have someone to talk. I mean, everyone's got friends or family members that they can talk to, but it's different because oftentimes the issues that you're dealing with or the other people involved in the issue, your family members are deeply familiar with, and it's not an objective point of view.
Exactly.
Well, I can just imagine, though. I mean, Marina, what was it like when you told your parents or a significant other, my first job is at the prison?
I will say I think my mom was a little worried. You know, I was in the room with my patients alone. There weren't guards where I was.
So do you think she was?
I got special training. So
was there a panic button?
No, actually, you know, there were a few people doing internships, and a couple of the guys were actually Villanova football players. So when we did, you know, like a safety kind of training where I learned different moves in case I did ever feel threatened, I actually got to, like, bring down these, like, 250-pound guys.
Wow. Yeah, that's one of the benefits of the job, huh?
I felt comfortable, and honestly, I never felt threatened by any of the people I worked with.
Well, you were there to help them, and they probably appreciated that, but Mom was just a little worried?
I would say a little worried.
Okay. All right. So we've all week long we've had what I consider to be people very knowledgeable, experts in this field of opioid addiction, and just about everyone, I think maybe they all have said that they fear that we haven't seen the worst yet, that this thing hasn't peaked in our community. What's your thoughts?
I would agree with that. I know that I had an email sent out just about 2 months ago that this year, you know, there is a huge increase in the amount of fentanyl being involved with the overdose deaths in Kenosha County. It was like 3 in 2016, and so far this year there's already been 12. So, I mean, I think that speaks pretty highly. I mean, we're not – and that was – I got that email back in August. So, I mean, we're not even done with the year yet.
So now in the scheme of things – oh, incidentally, if you're just joining us, Marina Murata is with us, a licensed professional counselor at Rogers Memorial Hospital. And when it comes to Rogers, they've got quite the national reputation. We have a friend that's a physician here in town, and said that when it comes to people that are dealing with addiction problems and things of that sort, that Rogers is one of the go-to places. Definitely one of the go-to places. And you do have a national presence, don't you?
Yeah, I know they just opened another location actually in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. We're working to open a location in San Francisco. There's a lot more places throughout the state of Wisconsin, obviously. There's Tampa Bay, Minnesota.
Yeah, the physician I'm referencing, she did practice in Philadelphia.
And was
very impressed with your hospital system. So now, when you enter the picture, where are these patients? Are they like in recovery? Are they at a point now where maybe
no? I would say they definitely aren't in recovery. They are just like, some people come in really ambivalent. They don't even know if they really want to change. Maybe they've been encouraged to come or been given an ultimatum by their family. As some of you might know, like Rogers has inpatient units.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where you're going to go, obviously for like a suicide attempt, a psychotic break, but also if you need to go through detox. So if you're withdrawing, if you want to stop using heroin, but you need a safe place to withdraw, then sadly insurances don't cover opioid withdrawal as much as they do alcohol and benzodiazepines.
Now, why would that be, Marina? Because, I mean, it's just as serious, just as complex a problem.
So what it actually comes down to is you can't die from withdrawing from opioids. But you could potentially die withdrawing from alcohol or benzodiazepines like Xanax. Xanax or benzos and also alcohol, you have the potential for having a seizure when you're going through withdrawal.
What an irony there, because when you hear of opioids, it seems to kill people so quickly, yet the withdrawal doesn't, so it doesn't get covered. It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And, I mean, we've had people come into our program and we're like, we need you to go inpatient. Like, you need to go through the process. And insurance won't cover it. So we just have to kind of meet them where they're at, you know. If that means they're, sweating and going through all the unpleasant withdrawal symptoms, I mean, that's what it comes down to sometimes.
And those can be very intense. I imagine there are people that wish they were dead when they're going through withdrawal.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think that that's a big piece of why there is so much relapse with opioids. So it's like you get just a little taste and you can go through withdrawal. And who wants to go through that? So you keep taking it. It's just so unpleasant. People kind of describe it as, you feel like you're dying, or it's like the worst flu you've ever had. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to go through it.
No.
So how do most of your patients get referred to you? You had mentioned some of them are encouraged to go by their loved ones or their parents, but would that be the majority, or do you have folks that are just at their wits' end and they come in begging and pleading for help? Or can you kind of give us the profile? Is there a typical person that comes to see you at Rogers, or does it just run the gamut?
I would say, honestly, it runs the gamut. There is a variety. So, like I said, they've been encouraged by family, friends. Maybe they've been court mandated due to charges against them. It's a stipulation of their probation or parole. I have had people come in and be like, I need to be done. Like, I can't keep doing this. I've lost my family. I've lost all my money. Like, I can't.
So they've hit bottom.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I imagine you see all walks of life, rich, poor, old, young, everything in between.
Yeah, that is what a lot of like new clients that I see, they'll kind of almost be surprised by, the other people they're in programming with. Like, I didn't expect to, have somebody with that, like, high of a status, so to speak, being, here for an addiction.
And I imagine some of your patients, the slide down was quicker than one would estimate.
Yeah. I will say, though, the decline can be pretty fast, but recently I've noticed a lot of use that stems from, like, childhood. So, sadly, I've been hearing about a lot of clients getting exposed to opioids as early as, like, 12 and wow. using throughout high school. And, you know, they'll present to treatment in their late 20s, early 30s, being like, okay, I need to be done now. Like, this is completely delayed my life, essentially.
And right, you're talking about people right here in our community. We could have kids as young as 12 and 13 using opioids right here in Kenosha.
As insane as that sounds, yes. That those are the stories I hear. I mean, granted, I don't see them when they're 12. I see them much later, but yeah.
Right. But Marina, if it's a youngster that starts at 12 or 13 and then you see him at 26, 27, there's probably a lot of miles on them, right? They don't look age appropriate, do they?
No, that definitely happens a lot, where you almost appear 20 years older. You have a lot of wrinkles, wear and tear. Obviously, a lot of the times youth shows up in your dental work. Yeah. You know, your teeth are going to be miscolored, missing.
Yeah. Well, that's because that's not exactly a high priority, is it?
No, hygiene definitely lacks.
Yeah.
You know, you start changing your friends, and the most important thing for you is going to be feeding that addiction so that you don't go through those withdrawal symptoms.
Yeah. I got to ask you, the show Intervention, what's your thoughts on that show?
So that's a great question. So it's definitely entertaining, right? I'm sure you've seen it.
Oh, yeah.
It's heart-wrenching.
It's kind of like a car wreck or a train wreck. You can't you can't pull away from looking at it.
I think, and so, like, as the show kind of shows, because I know at the very end they kind of give you, like, a synopsis of what happened.
Right, an epilogue.
Maybe, like, a year later.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So some people, it works. I would say the majority of people, you know, they have to be ready. You have to be willing to make major lifestyle changes for you to be successful in recovery. And I think that a lot of the people on the show are, you know, appeasing their family members, because that's kind of the premise of the show. We're going to have an intervention. You're going to set boundaries, aka you're going to cut ties with this person.
And do all that in 1 hour.
Obviously, I think the show is condensed, but
yeah,
it takes place over a super short period of time.
Right.
And you're almost asking them to, like, move mountains. And it's
right.
like these things take a really long time. I mean, you can't just rewire your brain in a few weeks.
I had to ask you that because it almost seems like, maybe that's just how viewers want it, but it's almost like you got to give us closure in 60 minutes or less.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, along the lines of addiction, we are totally a society of instant gratification. So, you know.
So true.
I want a clean cut, happy ending by the end of my 60 minutes.
And on average, how many sessions will you have with a patient? I mean, does this go over a protracted period of time?
So at least at the IOP level, we usually, which stands for intensive outpatient, so we'll see patients for 3 hours, 4 times a week.
Wow.
And that usually lasts about 4 to 6 weeks. And again, that depends on insurance because they kind of rule our world. But other treatments, like residential, if you can afford it, is super awesome, usually lasts 30 days. So, I mean, there's varying levels of treatment, and then there's always just outpatient, which is when you see, you know, a therapist once a week or so.
And do you have residential treatment right here in Kenosha?
We do not have it in Kenosha. We do have a residential treatment center in Oconomowoc.
Nice.
So they have the Harrington Recovery Center, which is specifically for addictions. And then they also have a Focus residential for usually, like, it's more for mood disorders. Mm-hmm. So,
but the intensive outpatient can be done right here in Kenosha.
Yes. And we also have partial hospitalization in Kenosha. So it sounds more intense than it is. So you're not actually hospitalized. You get to go home. It's 6 hours, 5 days a week. So Monday through Friday, kind of like a job. You know, you get to treatment at 8:30 and you're out of here by 2:30.
But it breaks mm-hmm. your daily routine.
Yeah. And what treatment really provides too for a lot of people is a schedule. It gives you routine. It gives you something to go to. It keeps you busy, which, you know, when you're coming from, you know, a bad place in your life, you probably don't have those things right now. Yeah, so we can kind of help you build that up.
Need structure. I don't know if this is a fair question, but I'm going to ask it anyways.
Okay.
Marina, how many years do you think you have in you? I mean, I could see where there could be a high burnout rate for a profession like this.
There is. There's high turnover. I would say I got a lifetime in me. I'm pretty optimistic. Obviously, I'm young, but a big piece of you know, work, and I'd say anywhere, is that self-care piece. It's taking care of yourself. It's not mm-hmm. bringing work home with you. You know, it's having a life outside of work, essentially.
Right.
So I think I definitely have that.
All right. So in order for you to be productive and to continue to give back, you need to have limits or boundaries or be able to say no, turn it off, right?
Absolutely.
Or else you won't be in this much longer, will you?
Yeah, I mean, I know that some people, they do not enjoy working with addiction because mm-hmm. There are times when you just feel totally beat down. You get one person after another that's been relapsing and you almost blame yourself. But you know, then you'll get somebody where where it's totally different. So
enough success stories that it keeps you going.
Yes, definitely. I definitely have some success stories in my book that I got to kind of look at on a rainy day.
All right.
Well, that's good news that you have those success stories. And if we have somebody listening that has a loved one or a family member that would like to be one of those success stories, how do they get a hold of you?
They can get a hold of us just by calling our main number. I can pull that up for you guys.
I mean, it's Rogers Memorial, that's easy to find, wouldn't you say, Marina?
Yeah, I mean, obviously a lot of people find us with a Google search. We have a website.
All right, Marina, we're out of time, but I want to thank you. We could have talked forever. Have a good day, okay?
Thank you so much for having me. You guys take care.
Thank you. All right, we're out of here. We'll see you tomorrow at 1.
Bye.
70 years of live and local radio for Kenosha. This is AM 1050 WLIP, Kenosha. It's 3 o'clock. Now...